Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/watsonassistant.
This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
Huddle, marry, trade. Will that be coming up at 12-ish today?
Yeah, with a potential new name, too, thanks to friend Danny Dimes on Twitter.
Really?
We may go with smash, stash, or trash.
Smash, stash, or trash. Well, that's
and
not bad.
I have a luscious mustache right now, so stash actually seems pretty fitting, yeah.
Now, if you take a sip of coffee, does the mustache go into the coffee?
Yeah, anything I eat gets stuck in the mustache, yeah.
So you could put a little flavor on the bottom of the mustache and just enjoy it the rest of the day.
Yeah, like I ate pancakes yesterday, and then like probably 2 hours later, I went to lick my lip, and I could still taste the syrup on the mustache, which was a nice treat, to be honest.
Have you thought about trimming the mustache?
This is actually a trimmed version. It's still causing some problems. I'm not very good at trimming it. I'm afraid if I start getting like too crazy with it, that I'll start like hacking into it, and then I'll just have to shave it off.
But isn't this the time to get crazy with it? Like what could possibly happen that would be awful? No one's seen it.
Well, no one's seen it, but if I take a huge chunk out of it, then I'm just going to have to shave it off. There's only so many acceptable mustaches you can wear. This one I got going now is more like, it's not handlebar, but it's a little bit lower than a normal mustache. And then if I hack into it the wrong way, then I got a Freddie Mercury mustache. And then, I mean, at that point, then it's just got to come off.
Right.
You don't have a mustache, do you?
I've seen a lot of mustaches, though. A lot of quarantine mustaches.
Well, why not?
A lot of men are experimenting with the stashes.
I mean, yeah, the guys playing yesterday were experimenting with stashes, weren't they?
Yeah, the team.
Ricky
team
and Matt Wolf and those guys?
Oh, yeah. That might have been a team. I wonder if that was a team thing, because they were on the team if they went with stashes. Yeah, interesting. Team camaraderie.
So who do you
MJ,
who do you guys
MJ
play?
Had a little bit of a mustache.
Who, MJ?
Yeah, MJ had a mustache.
Yeah, but that was like a weird...
it wasn't great.
Well, yeah, but even so, it's like it's Michael Jordan, so it's cool. Don't you think?
Yeah, probably. I mean, there wasn't
like
much
anybody
that
else
did
that had that mustache, you'd be like, oh my God. But Michael Jordan could pull it off better than anyone could. Don't you think?
Yeah, probably. He was the epitome of cool. I mean, looking back on some of his outfits, I mean, if you've seen him golf and he's got the giant baggy cargo pants and everything else, I mean, he's not... Doesn't have great style.
The suits were terrible.
But here's the question. Were the suits terrible when you look at it now? Or do you remember back in the day looking at those suits and saying, boy, these are awful?
No, clearly it's hindsight, right, Dave? Right. But I'm just saying the fashion for the 90s in terms of men's suiting
was not good.
Was not good. Not at all.
No, and then the one clip where he's sleeping on the training table.
And he's got the two-tone shoes on. Yeah.
And he got the white socks. Yeah, that's not a great.
Not
and then
a good
the Oakleys
look.
He wore in the final, those circle Oakleys.
They were bad.
Awful.
But there's not a lot of people that look better bald than with hair, and he might be one of those people.
There's no one I can think of currently or ever that looked as cool in a basketball uniform than Michael Jordan.
Yeah. Like any uniform you put him in.
Yeah, but everything, like, I mean, just, I mean, the sneakers, the, I mean, how the way his jersey fit him, like, it was perfect. The sleeve on his calf, like, it was perfect.
Perfect. Yeah, he was super cool. Outside of being an unbelievable player, he was the definition of cool, wasn't he?
You know what I thought was amazing, too? Did you get a chance to hear any of, or read any of the interview that his daughter did?
No.
Just about how much different...
I saw her interviewed last night, but I didn't see she did an additional interview?
Yeah, she couldn't believe that he actually signed up. Like, she was happy that he did it, but she was surprised that he would put him out there. I mean, he put himself out there because he's a real private person. Mm-hmm. Like, would put himself out there and like be that emotional. And then she kind of went into how much different his public persona was, where how he was with his teammates as opposed to how he was with his kids. She was like, he's a complete mush with his kids. Like anything they wanted, they could get.
Mm-hmm. If you're Michael Jordan's kids, how do you live up to that standard?
You can't.
You know what I mean?
And one of his sons was a decent basketball player and played college, I think, in Central Florida for a little bit. But
Yeah, I'm just saying, even if you do something else, like to do whatever you do with that kind of excellence, like that's gotta be impossible to try to live up to.
Yeah, you probably change your last name at some point.
Yeah, I mean, everybody, think about it. Everybody wants to hear about your story because your father is the greatest basketball player of all time. Yeah. No matter where you go in the world, if people know your father is Michael Jordan, everybody wants to talk to you and get insight into your life.
So it probably opens up more doors than you could possibly imagine, and there's probably more pressure on you than anybody should have to deal with.
I mean, is it pressure if it's impossible to live up to? And you know that going in?
So, you, I mean, going in, everything you do, you know there's no chance you'll ever be as good as your father was.
Like, no matter what you choose to do, there's a pretty good chance you'll never be as good at that as he was at basketball.
Right. You just have to have like, the mental fortitude where you could say and be comfortable in your own skin, I would think, because you're never going to be as good as he was, ever.
That's tough, Dave. That's
yeah,
tough.
It is. There's years of therapy in that. Those kids must have gone to a lot of therapy.
Well, I'm sure.
It couldn't have been easy. Could you imagine if your name was Michael? Could you imagine if your name was just Michael Jordan? Like the level of disappointment when you show up for your reservation?
Thank God. Yeah.
Michael Jordan, you're for this is Michael. You're Michael Jordan. Yeah, I'm Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
You got the actor Michael Jordan, but he has the B in there. He's got that middle initial to kind of separate him from Michael Jordan.
He's a good actor, too.
He's a good actor, but I mean, think about it, though. Like, he's Michael. If he just went by Michael Jordan. And MJ, like the bullshit, Michael Jordan didn't show up. How disappointed would people be?
Right? You're here? All right.
Exactly. I mean, okay. Okay.
All right.
We'll seat you. But
we're going to put you at a different table now. We're going to have to completely rearrange.
You see the kitchen? You can be right by that. Because we thought you were different. All right. 800-919-3776. Let's go to John in Greenbrook. John, you're on 98.7 ESPN, buddy.
Hey, how you doing? You guys have a great show. I really like it.
Thanks, John.
That Ralph Macchio, I think you need to take a closer look. He's got a full rug on his head.
Is that true?
Yeah, it's they show before and after.
And you have 100% confirmation that that's a rug?
Yeah,
it's just, a belief that you have.
No, it's like it's confirmed.
Oh no.
Yeah, I'm sorry to hurt your.
Nothing wrong with a gorgeous rug.
Well, it's a good rug. I didn't know, and I'm usually good at spotting a toupee.
Like Bill Shatner has a much better one.
I'll have to start looking.
Hey, John's just airing out everybody now.
Yeah, I mean, take no prisoners, huh? My God.
I'm going to take no mercy on you guys because I can make an argument that Jordan is not the best player, that he's the fourth best player ever.
In the NBA?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, LeBron number one, Larry Bird number two, Magic, and then Michael.
It's just not right. John, and trust me, I'm not a Michael Jordan apologist. It was hard for me to watch the documentary. I kind of dislike him so much, but it's just that you can argue LeBron. You can't even argue the other two guys.
The other two guys will tell you that Michael Jordan is head and shoulders above him. Larry Bird and Magic Johnson will tell you Michael Jordan was a better basketball player than they were.
He was.
But I mean, to sit here and try to make an argument when the actual player will say, yeah, I wasn't as good as him. It just seems a little, I don't know, seems a little bit of a stretch from John.
No, I think you could argue, and I don't think it's true, but I think you could argue LeBron. But I don't think you can argue the other two.
You could argue LeBron is as good as Michael Jordan, but I don't know that you can say LeBron is better than Michael Jordan. I don't think you can say definitively like LeBron was a better basketball player than Michael Jordan. I mean, listening to David Stern talk about Michael Jordan's impact on the NBA. In the early 90s, the NBA was in 80 countries. And then by the time Michael Jordan got done, they were in over 200.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Like, Michael Jordan was an ambassador for the NBA. He was also an embarrassed ambassador for American culture. Like, that's how big Michael Jordan was.
He was like a Beatle.
That you would have to start talking about rock stars, Dave, in order to find somebody that has that kind of stature, in order to find an equivalent in terms of what that individual meant to the culture. Michael Jordan is responsible for globalizing the NBA.
At the time, though, he was bigger than a rock star. You get Seinfeld before games. You got Leonardo DiCaprio coming to congratulate him. Oh, what you did out there was poetic. And Jordan's like,
did you see how Jordan shooed Leo, though? Like, he talked to him for a second and he was like, all right, I'm back to celebrating again.
I thought he was very respectful to Leo.
No, he was, Dave, I'm not saying he was disrespectful, but think about it. If Leonardo DiCaprio walked in the locker room to talk to an athlete today,
right,
what that would be versus how they would react versus how Jordan reacted. True. Jordan entertained Leo for all of a minute, then went about his business.
True. You're right, but Leo is a far bigger figure today than he was back in 98, you gotta figure.
And you're probably right, Dave, but I guess the point I'm making is this. When it came to other stars, other celebrities, like Jordan was the guy that they wanted to get next to.
Yes.
Not the opposite. And usually athletes want to try to endear themselves to musicians, to actors, entertainers, comedians. It was the opposite. All of those individuals, all those stars wanted to be next to Michael. Like his games were must watch, like a must attend. Like that's how big Michael Jordan was. There was no bigger star on the planet than Michael Jordan. It was like Michael Jackson, Michael Jordan. That was both MJs. That was it.
They almost had to cancel, an SNL rehearsal because the line for autographs for Michael Jordan was that long.
Right. No, I know. He was at that level.
I mean, anyone that thinks that, listen, you want to make the argument that LeBron, at some point when this thing is all said and done, is in the, in the same room as Michael Jordan, go ahead, you can make that argument. Like, for me, you're not going to win that argument, but, I mean, just, if you want to think that Michael Jordan was, what do you say, the fourth best player or the fifth best player?
Four, yeah.
Okay, just look at, go take a quick peek at Michael Jordan's list of achievements and what he did throughout the course of his career and the immediate impact he had the second he stepped on the floor. He averaged 28 points a game as a rookie.
That's incredible. I mean, it's hard to compare anyone to Michael Jordan. It really is.
I mean, you're talking about a guy who won 5 MVPs, 6 championships, 6 finals MVPs, scoring leader 10 times, all NBA first team 10 times, all defensive first team 9 times, defensive player of the year, all-star game 4, all-star game MVP 3 times, rookie of the year, 2-time gold medal winner. I mean, that's, come on, man. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. The first time he won the gold medal was the kids. It was still the college kids. So he was the last college kid to do it because they did it in 84, right? That's when they won it?
Yeah.
With Bobby Knight.
Yeah.
Then 88 with John Thompson as the head coach, they lost. And then they had to bring Michael and the Dream Team to redo it back in 92. So he's the one that was the last one to win it as a college kid, and then the first one when they brought the Dream Team. Yeah, I mean, his accolades are unbelievable. They're unparalleled. They really are.
Which, again, we all won because McDonald's had the gold medal meal that had the triple cheeseburger and then the collector's cup.
Outstanding, by the way.
Which was phenomenal. Oh, you supersized that fry? Kidding me? Oh, the best.
I haven't had McDonald's in a long time.
Treat yourself.
Yeah, I should.
The Big Mac's not really as big as you remember it, though. I will say that.
Well, the fries are so good, though.
Delicious. Delicious.
Yeah.
We can do a whole show on fries. Who's got the best fry?
That's McDonald's. In terms of fast food.
Arby's. Arby's got nice fries.
The curly fries?
They're nice, but they're not McDonald's fries.
It's not McDonald's fries, though.
Just straight fry?
Yeah, I like McDonald's fries.
The crispy fries.
Now, where would you go breakfast? Have you tried Wendy's breakfast yet? I mean, I'm hearing rave reviews about Wendy's breakfast.
No. You're
saying that the Baconator biscuit, is that what it is?
I heard the Baconator breakfast sandwich is phenomenal.
Yeah. Yeah. I got to get involved in that. I haven't tried it yet.
The Egg McMuffin is still, it's hard to go wrong with the Egg McMuffin.
Sausage McMuffin with cheese.
I'm a sausage McMuffin guy. Yeah, I'm with Rick on that one. Sausage McMuffin or bacon, egg, and cheese.
Delicious breakfast sandwich.
Oh, by the way, speaking of which, Dave, and you're supposed to be doing your job getting me on Man vs. Food. This embarrassment yesterday I'm watching. He taps out of a breakfast challenge with 20. He gets a full hour to eat 5 pancakes, okay? 5 huge pancakes. You got some hash browns. You got some ham. You got, a chicken fried steak, some bacon, and some sausage. But you have a full hour to eat it. This embarrassment taps out with 20 minutes left. Taps
out. How close was he?
He wasn't even close. Taps out.
Really?
Embarrassing. It was embarrassing. I was embarrassed for him.
You couldn't have 5 pancakes and some ham?
Some big pancakes, but you have a full hour. I mean, you can't tap out with 20 minutes. Come on. It's embarrassing.
Yeah, no, that's,
you just quit.
That's embarrassing. Let's go to Mike in Jersey. Mike, you're next up on 98.7. Hello?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Hey, Mike.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Hey, guys. How you doing? Hey, listen, I just want to say I respect all three of you guys' input on everything. I really respect and listen to you guys every day. That's the first thing I want to get out there. Second thing I want to get out is I heard Jay Williams on Get Up this morning, him and Brian Windhorst, and they were asking them about the comparison between Jordan and LeBron. And they, to me, totally, I mean, I understand that they have to have a relationship with LeBron going forward. And I just don't know, I mean, for those guys to be basketball knowledgeable, to watch this Last Dance and not put Jordan head and shoulders above LeBron, I can't really understand that. Just one quick point about that is,
well, you can you can understand it. I mean, you insinuated it. I mean, the reason why, you know, and I love him, he does a great job, but the reason why Wendy is doing what he's doing now is because of his relationship with LeBron James.
Correct. And I wanted to say that because they still have to have a relationship with him going forward. But my thing is, if you just look at the teams MJ had to go through to get to the finals, those Pacers teams, those Knicks teams, the Celtics, the Pacers and the Knicks, all the Cavs, LeBron had nowhere near nothing like that to get to where he had to get to in his quest to get to a championship. Nothing like that. I don't think he could have sustained that. Jordan didn't miss a game. He never complained of an injury. What about the fake injury LeBron had after the finals? He comes on TV with a cast on. Nobody ever, after that, it was nothing with the injury. I respect LeBron. I know he's one of the greatest to ever have done it. But on the scale of Jordan, I just don't see it. Guys, I don't see it at all. I just put Jordan head and shoulders above. I grew up in that era. I watched those battles with the Knicks, the Pacers, the Cavs, the Celtics, the Pistons, all of those Eastern Conference battles. It took him 7 years. And one more point, after every year, he could have opted out. He could have said, I want to go somewhere
else. Yeah, but time out. But time out for a quick second. I mean, don't get fooled, too. I mean, we all love Michael Jordan. But, I mean, what you saw, this 10-hour documentary, I mean, he controlled the narrative of this documentary, right? Like, he had the ultimate say in what you got a chance to see, right? So it's all about creating the narrative. And I think LeBron James is great at that. I mean, creating the narrative with the cat, whatever it ends up being. But, I mean, I just think, I mean, too, what works in Jordan's benefit, and again, I think because he was the first, that for a lot of people, he'll always be the best. For me, he'll always be the best. But, I mean, let's not forget, as bad a guy as Jerry Krause seems to be in this documentary, I mean, he built some pretty damn good teams. And let's not pretend like LeBron James had the luxury of a great GM and a great organization when he was with Cleveland either.
And I'll do you one better, Rico. Look at the circumstances with which Michael Jordan came into the league versus LeBron James. I mean, LeBron James came into the league being compared to Michael Jordan and having to live up to all of that entails, but also he was younger, and that's the point I was going to make, Dave. I mean, Michael Jordan had the benefit of being coached by one of the best basketball minds the game had ever seen at that time, and Dean Smith, being down in Carolina for 3 years. I mean, LeBron James didn't have that opportunity. Like there was a lot of learning for LeBron, especially earlier on in his career. That's why I can't begrudge him for going down to Miami and getting with Pat Riley. Like, he had to go to basketball school. Like, Pat Riley had to show him what winning was about in the NBA before LeBron James could get to that championship level. I mean, Michael Jordan, he did have to take some lumps and had to take some bruises, but Michael Jordan did play at Carolina. He did spend time down there when he had that injury working and getting back in shape, but also fine-tuning his game. Like, Michael Jordan had a lot of advantages that LeBron James didn't have.
And he was never anointed as a high school player to be the next great star in the world.
He was a third overall pick in his draft, eh?
Yeah.
And, I mean, LeBron James was number one, and they were saying, yeah, you're going to be the next guy to take up the mantle as the best player in the world, and we're going to compare you to Michael Jordan.
Yep.
At 18 years old.
You're right. And he's done a hell of a job. I mean, you could say that you think Michael's better, and that's fine, and I think most would agree, but LeBron has lived up to the hype.
Oh, no question about it. For me, it comes down to competitive greatness, and I don't think it's much of an argument between LeBron and Michael Jordan. But I will say that LeBron James's basketball genius, listen, he's not second to anybody in that regard in terms of how his basketball mind works. He's not.
Not at all. Not at all. Let's go to Dennis in Old Tappan. Dennis, you're on 98.7.
Hi, how are you this morning?
What's up, Dennis?
I'm from the home of the famous Jeffrey Mayer. But could I tell just a verse for a minute? I want to talk about Steve Kerr, but you were talking about McDonald's. Could I tell you a little trivia about McDonald's?
It's got to be real quick, but go ahead.
All right. They have a great relationship with Coke, and Coke gives them their syrup and beer canisters. Everyone else gets it in those disgusting tubes. So that's the story with that. But as far as Steve Kerr, after his father died, he would go on the road to games, and the fans were really cruel to him.
It was awful.
Remember that?
I remember he went to a game in Arizona State. He played at University of Arizona, and they chanted PLO, PLO to him when he went to the foul line. Awful. Disgusting.
Speaking of crazy fans, how about the lady, the Pacers fan with the blonde mullet?
You know who that was?
Nasty.
Who was that, Dave?
She was.
So you know, remember Luke Kornet?
Yeah. Yes.
That's his mother.
Get out of here.
Come on.
Luke
Kornet
from the Knicks.
True.
That's his mom.
Santiago is whispering in my ear that is untrue.
I think
Ray, you believe that's not true? I don't know. I saw on Twitter last night they had a photo of her.
No, she tweeted it.
Because it must be true.
She was messing with everybody.
Because you saw it on Twitter. It has to be true.
She was messing around that it was her?
I believe so.
I don't know about that. We're going to have to
She tweeted, did you see me on The Last Dance? She actually tweeted that.
Right.
And then she said, yes, but not me. She said she was joking.
Oh.
Does she look like the woman? Does she look like the woman?
I suppose she does look a lot like the woman.
Just
yes.
Like her.
There we go. I got the GIMP definition, by the way, too, whenever you guys want it.
No, I'd like it now.
Yeah, it has nothing to do with, I mean, the GIMP, yeah, it does mean, you know, person that is lame due to the crippling of the legs or feet, but also part of the definition is it's a sexual submissive. Almost always a male. Dressed generally in black leather suit, if you're wondering.
Okay.
All right, yeah. We could have probably dealt without that. Let's take a break.
What did you think was coming? What did you think was coming?
Well, I didn't think that.
I mean, you're pretending like you don't know what it is.
Well, you know, we didn't go back. We didn't revisit it. We left it alone. You bring it back, and then you go there.
This is from the dictionary.
No surprise.
I'm allowed to do it because it's right from the dictionary. It's like when Milbury asked me, what is the definition?
All right. Why don't you rifle through the dictionary and continue that as a theme of the show and see how long we're on the air for? I can do it because it's in the dictionary.
Oh, my gosh.
You really are a gem. All right. Now, Rick, this will, I think, interest you. 98.7 ESPN and Stu Leonards want to thank all the brave and hardworking heroes during this pandemic. Stu Leonards has created a first responders gift box with healthcare workers and first responders in mind. If you know a hero who deserves Stu's favorite treat, send us their story at 98.7 FM at ESPN.com or tweet with the hashtag 987Salute. We'll choose 10 winners Friday, salute each recipient on air, and send them a Stu's gift box. Again, email 98.7 FM at ESPN.com or tweet with the hashtag 987Salute. If you'd like to purchase a gift box to send, head to stewsgifts.com. That's stewsgifts.com for every first responder gift box they sell. Stews will donate $25 to the American Red Cross. I know you would like that very much.
I like that a lot. I do love that. Yeah.
See, I know you. I know what makes
you do. Take. I mean, you're like my radio wife.
I'll take that.
I'll take it. You like it.
I'll take it. I'll run with it. I like it. I like it. By the way, I'm not the only one who was fooled by thinking that was Luke Kornet's mother. I guess she said her family had to rewind The Last Dance last night and watch it again over and over and over to confirm that, in fact, it was not her. They thought it was her.
Yeah, that's like when I watched The Wrestler. I'm like, oh, is that my mother? Nope, that's Mickey Rourke.
Oh, same, God.
Same kind of idea.
So I got fooled, but then she tweeted out, did anybody see me on The Last Dance?
She's trying to be funny.
Well, I mean, I fell for it, but it seems like a lot of people fell for it.
Yeah, but a lot of people didn't announce it on the radio.
You think it's a bad look for me?
No, not a bad. I mean, it's just a little bit. I mean, it's not great for the show, but I mean.
So you think the show takes a hit because I thought that was Luke Kornet's mother? Really?
Yeah, I mean, it's just the credibility. I mean, uh-huh. Canty probably agrees. The credibility of the show.
Really? You look at me
a little bit. Yeah, we take a little bit of a knock because you're usually on point with your facts, Dave. To float that out there and not have any evidence to support it other than
Twitter. Well, I have evidence of her saying, did you see me on The Last Dance?
I'm just saying, Dave.
But that's the problem with Twitter. There's no context.
Yeah. But she said
it. Realize. Yeah, but she was joking. You didn't realize.
But you have to verify it, Dave, before we go to the airwaves with it.
I agree with that. That's okay.
I'll fall on the sword. I'm sorry. I messed up.
You can bounce back.
I'll do my best.
Plenty of time.
All right. So NFL, and I discussed this for a little bit, and there's a lot of differing viewpoints on this, and NFL discussing this is so weird to me. If and I guess they're going to vote on it, and if 24 of the 32 teams pass it, then this would become a new rule. If you hire a minority coach, you'd move up 6 spots in the draft. If you hire a minority GM, you'd move up 10 spots. If you go for the daily double, Chris, you'd move up 16 spots well into the second round. This would be all from the third round. You'd move up potentially into the second round if you hire a minority GM and coach. I don't know. I have a problem with this. A lot of people like it. A lot of people turned off by it. Chris, what's your take on this new ruling potentially?
Well, here's the thing. I'm not saying that people can't be critical of this new proposal, but if you're going to be critical, then you got to be able to come up with some suggestions, solutions, or answers. Because I think the NFL deciding to do this shows you how they view this problem. And the fact is that Roger Goodell is trying to have more urgency about trying to fix the problem. We've had the Rooney Rule for 18 years, and there's less diversity in the NFL in the way of head coaches now than when I came into the league in 2005.
Which is sad.
In 2005, we had 6 black head coaches. Now we only have 3. There's a problem with that. It's systemic. And so when you talk about criticizing this proposal, while you may think that it's a bridge too far, and it might ultimately end up being a bridge too far, give me some things, some suggestions that you think could spur meaningful change in terms of hiring practices for NFL teams when it comes to top-level positions, both in the front office and on the coaching staff.
Here's what I'll say. I don't have it. Clearly, the system is broken because minorities are not getting the jobs. It just feels strange to me to actually reward a team by hiring a minority, Rick.
Yeah, I don't love the rule. I mean, I don't. I mean, I'm embarrassed for the NFL. I mean, it's 2020 and we're still having conversations about this, that you have to incentivize owners to hire the most qualified candidates. I mean, Eric Bieniemy is a perfect example.
It's gross.
So, no, I don't have the answer. I don't think that's part of the problem is no one really has the answer. But, I mean, to try to all of a sudden, you know, incentivize ownership with, you know, draft pick compensation to hire, I mean, minority candidates is, I mean, I can't imagine that there's a lot of minority coaches. I mean, I've heard Herm Edwards, I heard some of Anthony Lynn that are happy that this is something that they're considering. Well, you want to earn the job. I mean, that's what everyone wants to do, right? I mean, the sport's supposed to be the ultimate meritocracy, and I know that doesn't exist. That's perfect world conversation. But no one wants to be felt like they're given something. They want to earn it.
Well, here's the thing. The fact is that coaches aren't getting the opportunity, and if it was just a matter of competency, then you would have more black head coaches. It's hard to believe that a league comprised of 70% black, when you talk about the guys that are actually playing the game, that you wouldn't have players past and present that would be interested in trying to develop into a head coach. Like, I just don't believe that. So if you're talking about the competency not being the issue with the pool of people that would be considered to be head coaches, I feel like it comes down to prejudices and biases at the ownership level. And you have to try to figure out a way to change that if you're the NFL. And to me, accepting the status quo is something that we can't do. We can't. We've got to do something.
See, I think we're all in agreement. I think the three of us agree that there's something wrong, that it's a broken system, that something needs to change. I'm totally on board with that. I don't know. And maybe I'm wrong, and maybe a lot of people say you're wrong and we don't agree with you. It feels strange to reward, to say, okay, if you hire a minority, you now move up 6 spots or 10 spots, or if you go, you know, minority GM and coach, now you move up 16 spots. It feels awkward to me.
Well, Dave, listen, I get it, and I understand where Anthony Lynn and Lewis Riddick and others are coming from, but I think we have to acknowledge that these black coaches and black scouts and executives, they just want the opportunity. We just want the opportunity. And listen, if it means that, okay, a team is going to do the right thing because of this incentive, at least they're getting an opportunity. I have a hard time believing that if you gave a black candidate a head coaching job and, you know, one of the things that pushed the team in that direction was the incentive. I just don't think that black coach would turn down the opportunity because of it. I just don't see that happening. So long they've been fighting to try to level the playing field in terms of being able to get in the room and interview for these positions. If you actually get a chance to become a head coach, no matter what the circumstances are, I just don't see them turning that down.
But Chris, here, let me ask you this question though, right? Is it ultimately in that coach's best interest? Like if the team, if you found out, right, that the reason why you got the job was because of the draft pick compensation, what does that say about the organization that you're joining? I mean, does that scream to you that that's a you know, fully functional, great organization?
I don't think that the sole reason that the organization would hire one of these candidates would be improved draft position. Because you're talking about your coach or your general manager being one of the faces of your franchise. I don't think that would be the sole reason, but it could be something that nudges a team in the right direction. Now, here's the thing. I'm not saying that this is a perfect proposal by any stretch. I think Clinton Yates, when he was on with Carlin this weekend, put it perfectly. The reason why it seems like it's absurd is because of the absurdity of the issue that we're facing. That we're in 2020 and race continues to be an issue when it comes to the comfort level that owners and team presidents have with hiring men of color to be general managers and head coaches. That's a problem. I mean, the NFL has tried to tackle it with the Bill Walsh Minority Mentorship Coaching Internship Program. They've tried to tackle that, but that's just a pipeline to getting opportunities for college-level coaches, high school-level coaches to be exposed to coaching in an NFL environment. But that hasn't led to more men of color getting coordinator positions, head coaching positions, and being considered for general manager spots. So you have to try to do something to level that playing field. And to me, that means putting position coaches in the NFL that are of color in proximity to ownership so they can develop some type of comfort level, especially when it comes to the coaching cycles, the turnover, and having an opportunity to interview for these jobs. They've got to find a way to be able to do that in order to make that happen. And it's not like we haven't seen companies in corporate America try to tackle this issue. We've seen that. Like my girl, she works for L'Oreal. Before that, she worked with PwC. And they had a program called the Vanguard Program that was designed to help minority employees and train them for top-level leadership positions within the company. Like, there are other entities that had to deal with this same issue. So it's not like the NFL is the first one. I just think that in order to solve it, we can't put the onus on individual clubs. I think it's the NFL having to come together collectively in order to solve it. And to me, that means the owners not only committing dollars and resources to the problem, but actually committing their time and getting the opportunity to know some of these position coaches that hopefully can develop into head coaches and some of these other scouts that can develop into GMs moving forward. I think that's how you have to try to tackle this problem. I don't think that making it something incentive-based is the way to go. I think you have to try to do it collectively. And you have to get the owners involved because that's who ultimately makes the decision.
I mean, you would imagine too of all the major sports. I mean, one of the biggest thing for any head coach is his ability to relate to his players. I think that's what makes Mike Tomlin so successful in what he does. I mean, how many times, you know, have we said after seeing what happened with Antonio Brown and Lev Bell, like the fact that, you know, most of that was kept under wraps.
That he kept it together so well. Yep.
Exactly right. I mean, of all the sports, when you start talking about, what is it? I mean, 75% of the league is of color. I mean, wouldn't you be, I mean, just good business. I mean, 75% of my players are men of color. What's more relatable than having a coach of color? You know what I mean? Like it seems like it would be the perfect.
Next
the perfect
step,
opportunity.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't be fighting it. You'd be embracing it.
But, Rick, you know how this goes, man. I mean, when it comes to owners trying to decide who the next head coach is going to be or who the next general manager is going to be, they're going to lean on their network. They're going to lean at people that are in proximity to them. And that's, generally speaking, white men. That's what it is. I mean, going into any coaching search or general manager search, an owner has preconceived notions or ideas about the person that he wants to lead his team. And that's how they pare it down. And it ultimately ends up being somebody that's white more so than it ends up being candidates of color. And that's a problem. I mean, you got to find a way to fix that. And the only way to me that you try to fix that is that you get these owners in the room with people that will eventually develop into candidates for those jobs.
Well, that's what the Rooney Rule is supposed to do in theory.
Yeah, but the Rooney Rule is only happening during the interview process. It has to happen before that, Dave. I mean, when you start talking about networking and opportunities to get to rub shoulders with people that can eventually be in position to help you and give you a job. That happens at country clubs. That happens at churches. That happens at barbershops. And unfortunately, the owners are not going to the same places as some of these candidates of color. And so you don't have an opportunity to have that rapport, to develop a relationship before it comes to the interview process. And I think that's what the NFL needs to be pushing for. I don't know if it's a conference or a seminar that you have where the owners and the head coaches, coordinators, GMs all come in and you have all the minority position coaches in the NFL there. I don't know if it's something like that. I know at the collegiate level and at the high school level, they have coaching conventions. I mean, if you could do something like that, if you can have a program and outline it where you could bring those owners into the same room as coaches that can develop into head coaches, I think that's a great place to start because it's all about being able to build a relationship. I remember before I even got my first job, one of my friends in college, he said, the best thing you can do is make your friends before you need them. When it comes to these high-level jobs, you have to be able to network, and I'm sorry, the NFL just does not provide a pathway for minority coaches to be able to network with the decision makers at the top of organizations, which includes team presidents and team owners. So you have to try to find a way to be able to do that in order to try to level the playing field.
So do you have an issue with this as the proposal, or if they instituted this and this gets passed, you'd feel okay with it?
Dave, I think it's a start. Mm-hmm. I think it's a start. To me, and people want to shoot down this proposal, I'm hesitant to pour water on it, even though I don't necessarily think it's the direction that we should be going in. I'd rather do something than to do nothing. I'm not going to throw my hands up at this situation because hiring practices when it comes to head coaches and general managers in the NFL have not been fair and they haven't been equitable because minorities are woefully underrepresented. Something about that has to change. We got to do something. We can't just do nothing. I'm not accepting the status quo. We should be beyond that. We should be better than that. And we got to push toward trying to make meaningful change. And if it means we got to do this, then so be it. But I will say this. The NFL did consult the Fritz Pollard Alliance. And they have been in communications in terms of trying to work out this proposal. This is what they came up with. I'm not saying that this is what they need to end on, but I think this is a good place to start because the conversation has started. And now it's at the forefront of the national conscience as far as sports go.
Yep.
Yeah, but that's what but here's what I don't like, Chris. And I agree with you. I mean, you can't just accept what's going on because it's unacceptable. The fact that it's 2020 and we're still talking about this. But I mean, you've heard from Louis Riddick. You've heard from Anthony Lynn. You heard from Herm Edwards. I mean, you've heard from men of color that have worked in the NFL in high ranking positions and are currently working in the NFL, as head coaches. And the word that is consistently said is they find it offensive. Like it's disrespectful. This is offensive. So if you're the NFL and your ownership and you're all right with, talking about a new rule that's going to offend people, well, then be all in with it. At least make it a rule that's going to actually incentivize teams to make the hires. Like, I mean, okay, so why is it going to be a third round pick? Well, do something financially. Make it a cap, make it a cap solution for some of these teams that they get because the owners care about money. Like, if you're going to come up with an offensive rule that, your African American employees find offensive.
Well, that's not all of them. I mean, we've heard from Anthony Lynn, we've heard from Louis Riddick, but there are a lot of former players that are a part of the Fritz Pollard Alliance, former players and coaches, and Harry Carson is a part of that as well. And he was actually on with Anita over the weekend, and he was discussing it. And this is something that they came to in conversations. Like, this is something that they've spent time, significant period of time, trying to develop. So while we have some people that are in the National Football League that are opposed to it, I'm sure we have some men of color that are behind the scenes that are on the other side of this thing, too. So, I mean, listen, even if it is one of those things that's polarizing, I just think that you have to start with something. And to me, I can't criticize it unless I can't feel comfortable with anybody criticizing it unless they can come up with an alternative.
Yeah, and right now, a lot of us cannot, even though some of us are certainly uncomfortable with this as a reward for hiring a minority. Let's take a quick break. Come back. 800-919-3776. Get to the calls. Top of the hour. A lot to do. We have a new name. I forget the name, but Rick's going to tell us in the 12 o'clock hour of Cuddle, Marry, and Trash. What is it?
What is it? It's Smash, Stash, or Trash.
Now, before I write this down and fall in love with it, is this done or is this up for debate?
This is a suggestion. I mean, nothing is. Who knows? I could get a phone call, you know, at 9 o'clock tonight.
You can't say it. Smash.
Save DPS. Exactly right. Like, who knows?
Right. How could you think you could say smash? It's a crazy word.
Yeah, no, but it's not a crazy word. I mean, it's listen. I'm looking for ideas, all right, buddy?
All right.
I'm trying to tiptoe around, you know, trying to get this segment on the air, all right? That's what I'm trying to do.
Well,
I'll check the dictionary and see if we can use it.
Let's take one quick call on this. Take a break, come back, top of the hour, and then get to the calls, get to the new name of our game show at about 12:12, and we'll see if that's going to pass through or not. And then is there sound effects? I mean, is it ready to go?
We got time. We're still working on it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Let's go to Danny and Merrick. Dan, you're on 98.7 ESPN.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
What's up, Dan?
Big fan of the show. You know, I just want to say, you know, when it comes to this problem, it's kind of, I have two feelings. Because on one hand, I do think it's a huge problem. You see the lack of minorities everywhere, and especially in executives, I think something needs to be done. But at the same time, you know, offering compensations, I do think it's a little insulting. And granted, I'm not a minority. I don't, you know the struggles they go for. But, you know, if a guy gets hired, even if it wasn't for the picks, there'll be rumblings. Did he get hired because of the picks? Did he get hired because he's black? You know, but I kind of like, Chris, what you were saying, where it was, you know, creating a program to get minorities in contact with executives and make those connections and, you know, networking and teach them things and give them that leg up. Because I agree it's a big problem, and I'm happy the discussion started. I just don't know if this is it.
Well, and that's the thing, Dan. I mean, getting the opportunity is what the most important thing is. And too many minority candidates, whether you're talking about coaches or general manager spots, don't get those opportunities. And we got to find a way to close the gap in terms of representation at the top levels of these organizations. And so, yeah, I think a symposium would be a good place to start, because you see that coaches conventions at the lower levels of sport are successful in terms of creating pathways to become a head coach. I think the NFL could do something like that, force teams to participate, force owners to participate, and then you disincentivize them, you discipline the teams that don't have all of those individuals at the top engage in that process. But to me, you know, the non-starter is doing nothing. Like, I just feel like you can't criticize this and say, well, since we don't have a perfect solution to the problem, we're not going to do anything. I think that's absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, everyone agrees that something has to be done. Right? There's no doubt about that. Rick, something has to be done.
Yeah, I agree with you. Something has to be done. But again, I can't sit here and tell you I have the answer, because I don't.
No, I don't think any of us do. But something has to be done. All right, 800-919-3776. Go ahead.
Go to break.
Here's what I want to say this, though, Rick. This is not reverse racism. This is not. Like, people throwing that out there and stuff. This is not the NFL saying, oh, well, we're just going to give people the job because they're black. That's not what this is. This is trying to fight for opportunities for those minority coaches, for minority scouts and front office executives to elevate to these top-level positions, because they haven't been given those opportunities for whatever reason. Now, we've already thrown out the idea that it's because of their competency. It's not because you don't have enough qualified black coaches or enough qualified black scouts. This is not that. It's not. That's not the reason. There are too many black men that are a part of this game that contribute to this game year in, year out, for us not to have more opportunities, for us not to have more head coaching jobs, for us not to have more general manager jobs. If you think that, well, we don't have more because there are not enough qualified candidates out there, then I can't help you. You don't need to be a part of this conversation if that's what you believe.
DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. Weekdays at 10 on 98.7 ESPN.